Thank you for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you've just tuned into our program, we're listening to Does TV Help Make Americans Passive and Accepting of Authority? Scott Horton talks to Bruce E. Levine, a clinical psychologist and author, and they discuss the effects of television on America and how it affects mental health issues and social isolation.
And you talk about here where the TV, in order to get people to pay attention to it, it has to like shun, say, the kind of old school, long term, back and forth conversation like the one you and I are having now here on this radio show, in favor of very short clips and whatever, just to keep your eyeballs tuned long enough so they can sell you the soap during the break, right? Just for their most base reasons only, they have to keep it all very short and punchy, and you won't even see anything like I remember in the 80s watching, or you know, my dad watching news shows where stuffy old people would talk for an hour about something important. You never see that kind of thing anymore. Everything is put together like it's, you know, an MTV thing, even on the cable news or the Sunday morning news shows or anything.
there is a kind of pathetic desperation that goes on in at all levels of our society. And even, I hate to say it, some of these places that I write for that you mentioned, Salon and those last couple of folks who published that article, you could feel that the titles that I often send them of articles are completely changed, you know, with the idea that if we can't manipulate somebody within a second to get sort of with an article title, you know, kind of if we can't immediately get them to hook them, then they're not going to pay any attention to this. There's absolute no faith, no confidence that you could actually put even in an article title exactly what the article is about and that somebody might be interested in off of that. And so you see that, of course. But the other thing that you're talking about, I think, is a hugely important area of culture America, is this kind of technology worship, which I've talked a lot about. And you see it, again, a lot in my profession, the mental health profession, is really horrific, because what do we know, for example, that almost any treatment, okay, any approach, any psychotherapy, almost anything works about as good as anything else. We know this from years and years of research, basically, whether it's a pill, an antidepressant, they all work about the same as one another, whether it's psychotherapy, whether it's whatever, that they all work about 30% of the time, and it's a lot of what it's about is faith or belief. But the thing is that if you can sell yourself as a kind of technology, so if you can sell yourself as a biochemical technology, if you could sell yourself as electrical, electroshock technology, that in this culture, in this society, you get like extra points for that. That people have been so kind of brainwashed, they've been so sort of propagandized, socialized into the idea that technology is superior in anything, that in a lot of areas it's very tragic. And in some areas it's comical, where people will buy into anything that can call itself technology versus something else which is free, which is just as effective that it's not technological.
Well, you know, my problem is I'm just as guilty as can be about this. I just, really the whole basis of this show is supposed to be me reading books and interviewing their authors. And instead, it's devolved into me reading articles and interviewing the writers. And then oftentimes, even now, it's me reading the headline and interviewing the guy that wrote the damn thing without even taking the time to read it or having the time to read it. It's just something interesting I saw on my Facebook page. Your article I actually read, by the way. But a lot of times, that's the way it happens. And you know what? I just don't read books at all. I mean, even ones that are so important that I'm desperate to read, that I want so bad to read. Oh, no. But now, not only am I obsessed with Facebook, now I'm finally stopping hating Twitter and beginning to love it. Oh, my God. I might as well take up drinking.
Well, there you go. At least you're in touch with that. And that's really what all these things are very similarly. I mean, whether, you know, television, it really is not just a metaphor, an addiction. That's one of the articles that I referenced in there, the Scientific American article. Is that really, it works, a lot of these things, whether it's Twitter or television or a Scotch or Valium, I mean, anything that really immediately reduces your level of tension, that takes you out of some state of conflict or tension and makes you give some kind of immediate state of relaxation, you're going to get addicted to. And so I think one of the things is that's great, you know, and my association of hearing a guy like you talk is like, let's all of us end our hypocrisy, at least about the fact that lots of Americans out there, we've got a whole dehumanizing, authoritarian, undemocratic kind of culture and society, at least for 99% of people out there, and who have no power over their life at all, and they're desperately kind of craving something out there to take them out of some pain and take them some out of tension tomorrow, whether it's Scotch or Prozac or television or whatever, or Twitter. And it's like, boy, we're in trouble. I mean, and if at least we're aware of that, where we won't completely lose our humanity. It may not save us, but at least we'll sort of retain some of our humanity when we remember that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, it really is something I know I used to be a cab driver, and I drive around at night, you know, picking people up, and you just see every house, every apartment, everywhere you go. It's just that blue glow in every living room. And you know what? There's some cool stuff to watch on TV. I like Breaking Bad and South Park and some other things. There's a lot to hate and a lot to try to ignore, but, you know, the thing of it is, there actually really is a lot to learn from TV. There's a lot of really cool stuff on TV, depending on how well you pick and choose and you know, how carefully you spend your time on it.
There's a lot of good beers as well. I mean, you know, right. I mean, I'm not anti-TV. I got to make that really clear. I mean, I'm understanding how I utilize it. That, like, over the course of my life, the more miserable I am, especially, for example, being in graduate school and being surrounded by a bunch of kind of shrinks type people who are saying nothing useful for me in my career. I mean, I'm the more in pain I am, the more I want to watch any escapist crap TV that there possibly can be. Right. You know, and I've spent thousands of hours in my life watching escapist crap have TV. And when I don't need to take the edge off, like when things are going pretty good for me, you know, I can watch a, you know, I feel okay about watching a Bill Moyers or Frontline or some of these other, you know, television shows where you're actually getting something out of it. But overall, I think people have to kind of like, you know, keep in touch with what the general effect is, even if all you're doing is watching quality TV, what that's generally doing to, in terms of how pacifying you are. And that's the bigger area that I started out this conversation with you, is like, let's take a look at all the spokes in the wheel that Americans are really just becoming so pacified that they're really hip to. I mean, a lot of, you know, journalists out there that I talk to, they want to have this fantasy that if only Americans knew the truth about our military industrial complex, for example, then certainly they'd get up, rise up, and do something about the fact that we're wasting all our money and just doing amazing, you know, just one destructive thing after another with this silly military industrial complex. But the polls show, for example, that 60-65% of people do oppose these wars, and they have for a long time. So on a lot of big issues of the day, Americans do know enough about what's going on that truths alone aren't setting them free. And that's a big thing that I want to kind of get across to journalists and writers, is like, we're going to have to do more than just hold on to this idea that if only we can break through the corporate media and understand that there's just a lot of other aspects of our culture and society that are overwhelming people to the point of just pacification, you know, and zombification, and just kind of keeping them from doing anything. And if you really want to have any kind of democracy in America, you're going to have to take a look at those big areas, television just being one of them, my own mental health profession, it being another one.
Right. Well, you know, I think a lot of what that comes down to is, I mean, of course, people have jobs and families and very busy things, but then again, they make time for a lot of other things. I think most of that comes down to, okay, maybe that's not the right way to say it. I think there are a lot of people who are politically inclined, who would tend to be interested in these kinds of things, if only for their own entertainment, right? Would rather listen to talk radio than classic rock in the afternoon or whatever while they're driving, that kind of thing. But they don't participate, they don't vote, they don't get very interested, because they know that they're powerless. They know, if they even pretend to imagine, oh, okay, what if I decide I was going to go start taking part in my local Democratic Party and work towards some change? You're going to laugh and stop before you even finish the thought. You know, this country, the government of this country does not belong to us. We don't have any say over it. So, indeed, why would someone waste their life, you know, swimming in all the details when it doesn't do them any good? And they have a family and a job and all these other, you know, personal priorities that they have to keep up with.
Absolutely. And, I mean, that's really where I you know, where we all need to kind of get to, is to understand that we're moving into one of these kind of, you know, what you know, Bob Marley sang about, and what a lot of folks who are in psychologists, social scientists, in colonized societies understand, is that you kind of move into one of these kind of states where a society of people becomes just totally kind of defeatist. They've given up hope because the, you know, whether it's a being colonized, you know, in our case, we're not colonized by a foreign country, we're colonized by this thing called a corporate state, this corporatocracy, which has left people kind of in a state of this kind of absolute helplessness, what Bob Marley sang about, called mental slavery, right? You know, emancipate yourself from mental slavery. And I think that's one of the things that Americans, what I'm trying to kind of help Americans get to, come out of denial over the fact that, you know, we are, as a culture and as a society, have moved into that kind of, you know, third, you know, whatever you want to call it, that kind of mentality of where people have just kind of given up. And we have to kind of understand that, you know, that there are ways when people get to that point of total defeatism and totally feeling like there's absolutely hopeless to do anything against powers to be, that there's a different kind of strategy, there's different kind of tactics if you want to help a society and culture move out of that zone. But the truths are no longer going to just set people free. That's just not going to be enough when you get to that state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and TV is such a big part of it, too. I remember, and this is from back before the internet, the great comedian Bill Hicks talked about how frustrating it was to him to watch TV news all the time. I guess he's specifically talking about CNN and watching it 24 hours a day on, for days on end and whatever, and how frustrating it is to never see his own voice of reason confirmed. And he got to where he's thinking, and he knew that other people were going through this, too. They start thinking they're the ones who are crazy, because apparently the consensus in the society is everybody agrees on this ridiculous nonsense, you know? And
right.
So every once in a while, to have someone say, oh no, Bill, you're the one who's right, and everybody else are the ones who are believing a bunch of nonsense, is like the greatest liberation of all. You know, to find out that actually, no, you're not that, it's not you, it's them, it really is, you know? And back then, there were the three TV networks, and that was it. Your local paper reprinting the New York Times, and that was it, before the internet, where you could get your voice of reason confirmed a little bit. But it seems like TV, Well, we can all tell, right, when you watch cable news, that none of those people are anything like us. And they have no idea what the hell they're talking about. I mean, they've got Andrea Mitchell, who's Alan Greenspan's wife, is hosting the daytime news about the financial catastrophe that we're in right now. And they don't even have to disclose the conflict of interest. They don't even know there is one. They're in this isolated little bubble that the rest of American society looks at them, and why pay them any attention at all, really?
Right.
You know?
Right, and all these guys who are, you know, the evening news, if anybody still is watching the CBS, NBC, ABC, but all these guys are multimillionaires. I mean, they're all completely disconnected just by the virtue of the fact that they're all in the top one-tenth of 1%. You know, all, you know, these Brian Williams characters and all that. But here's the thing. I think, if you know, a lot of what people may want to pay attention to, if they can, and it's just like pulling out of any kind of drug. And I totally have compassion for people who are addicted to television as a way of kind of killing their pain, because I have done it myself. But if you can go for a few days, or go for a week, or go for a month without it, interesting things start to happen. One of the deeply problematic things about television and democracy is that television keeps people isolated. So you get addicted to this thing, you sit alone for the most part, 5 hours a day watching this box, or maybe you've got somebody else you're watching a little bit with, but you're really not talking much with them. But in any case, you're not going out there and connecting with life. You're not going out there meeting people. You're giving yourself no chance at all. And that's exactly another great reason why television is a dream for an authoritarian society on many, many different levels. But one is, it keeps people isolated. So we have today in America, I mean, these are horrifying statistics to me, but 25% of Americans do not have a single confidant in their life. Not one person that they could talk about heavy things with. That's 25%. And a lot of that is this kind of vicious cycle. The more that you have television to kill your pain and loneliness, the more that you just keep using it, and so that you stay lonely. And so one of the really important core things is, for any kind of democratic movement, is you have people who are connected. You cannot have any kind of solidarity politically if you don't have people who even, you know, have friends who don't even know one another. So if you just stop watching, you're going to feel a sense of anxiety wave over you, but there's going to be a high likelihood that you're going to be like, maybe I'll just get out of my house and just go to a coffee shop or go somewhere there and maybe strike up a conversation with somebody, and we start talking about things, you know, and maybe you could actually make a friend, you know. So certain things like that are also really deeply problematic about television in terms of issues of just basic social isolation in America.
Right. Well, it seems too like that's really the society ends up a lot of times. That's the only thing that we have in common with each other. You know, Bill Kristol and them are always saying we need a big war so that everyone will feel part of something. But the default is that we all watch the same TV show. And I remember my friend Darren telling me about, I guess, a friend of his mom's or something came over, and when she was asking him who's his favorite on Dancing with the Stars, and he replied, "Well, nobody, because I've never seen that, because I'm not interested in that." She didn't believe him, and it turned into kind of a fight that she couldn't figure out why he was such a damn liar that he wouldn't admit who his favorite on the show was, because her understanding was, this is what makes us Americans together. We all watch Dancing with the Stars alone in our houses together. You know?
Well, that's a dream come true for some kind of, like I say, an Orwell Huxley kind of universe here,
right,
where that is the kind of experience of togetherness and community, because with that kind of sense, you will never have people challenging illegitimate authorities. I mean, if that's your state, and that exactly is the state of American society, nobody challenging illegitimate authorities in any serious way, and so therefore you have no democracy in American society.
There you go. Well, I wish we could keep talking, but I gotta go, because I got Mel Frankberg coming up next, but I want to thank you very much for your time, sir.
Sure. Thank you, Scott.
All right, everybody. That is Bruce E. Levine. You can find him at Alternet and at Salon.com. Does TV actually brainwash Americans? Is that Salon.com? His most recent book is Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populists, Energizing the Defeated, and Battling the Corporate Elite. I like that. He's a practicing clinical psychologist, often at odds with the mainstream of his profession, and he's also written more books, including Surviving America's Depression Epidemic and Common Sense Rebellion. He's written for Counterpunch and a lot of other left-wing sites that you're used to reading. And his website is brucelevine.net.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
you can sing the country song. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. It's easy. Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved. Nothing you can do, but you can learn how to be you in time.
That's all, folks.